Just before we start, I should introduce myself. My name's John Williams.
Okay.
I grew up in Southern California. I went to BYU. Served a mission in Bolivia, where I met my wife, who was serving as a welfare missionary. Came home, got a bachelor's and master's degree from BYU. And yes.
Is there a microphone you can use?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I'll be loud. Yeah, there's no microphone, but okay. So, where was I? So I have six kids, and I'm a technical writer by trade. Yeah, we're all running. That's about it. I wanted to talk about this issue because I served my mission from 1984 to 1986, and when I came home, I pretty much gave the standard, faith promoting stories and all of that. But one time, my wife and I were sitting in a restaurant in Spanish Fork, about 3 years later, and they announced on the radio that two missionaries had been murdered in Bolivia. And it just really took the wind out of me. And I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat for about 3 days. I was just, all these emotions and memories and things that I just really shoved way down inside of me came back. Sorry to start with that. All of these things that I had forgotten about, or made myself forget about, came flooding back to me, and then after 3 days, I managed to put them all back. And then this last year, I published a book where I wrote about my experiences there, and several of my friends who were in Bolivia with me wrote me to say that when they read the book, it was the same kind of thing. All of these things that they had sort of made themselves forget came out. And one of the guys that I talked to said that he cried all the way through the book. And I thought, well, I wasn't going for crying, but he said that he had just done what I had done, just made all of those memories go away. And I should say that this is not a universal thing. I'm not trying to tell anybody that missions are this horrible, terrible thing. My wife served in the same mission that I did. It's mostly the same areas at the same time. And she had a wonderful time and doesn't know what I'm talking about. So it isn't universal, but I thought that enough people said something like this. The people that weren't even in my mission, who were in, say, Europe or the States, they said the same kinds of things, that a lot of memories that they made go away had come back just from being reminded by reading the book. I guess the thing that's been bugging me lately, I don't know about you, but if there is an article in the press about missionaries, it always sort of follows the same template. It's always about that they sort of treat them like they're wide-eyed innocents, these naive kids that just passionately believe in what they're doing, and they go out, they sacrifice their girlfriends and family and education to go do these things. And I thought, that only gets a little part of it. And people go out for a lot of different reasons and stay for a lot of reasons. And it's not always just that, that naive innocence. And I was reading in the New York Times, they went to they sent a reporter to Uganda, where there's some LDS missionaries, and I'm sure they picked Uganda because that's the setting of the Book of Mormon musical, and which is, again, that musical treats the missionaries as if they're kind of clueless, uber-faithful kids that don't, you know, don't know anything. And so I read this article, and I was kind of disappointed because it did exactly the same thing. It did the same thing that every other article did. It just talked about these kids have taken a break from their education for something they really believe in, and it talks about the temptations they face, talked about what they do every day. And of course, one missionary said, I've learned more about myself in the last 20 months than I could if I was back home. You begin to understand what really matters in your life. So they don't, yes, it's a fine story, but it doesn't really explain what the missionary experience is like. When I was in Bolivia 30 years ago, boy, that makes me feel old. Sports Illustrated sent a guy out, a reporter, to three different places, to South Africa, Brazil, and Bolivia, to talk to football players who were missionaries. And the one in South Africa and the one in Brazil gave the standard kind of template. And then they came to Bolivia. And the missionary there, who I know quite well, he said, this country basically hates me. He said, it described Bolivia as a place where children throw rocks at missionaries, and people call the elders huevos, which is slang for testicles. And he said, if I'd stayed in America, I would have played pro football. Before, I just played because I was good at it. Now I know I love football. Now I know it's important. Before, I had trouble tackling. That was my only real weakness. Now I'll just go home and pretend every offensive player is a Bolivian calling me a huevo. Now, you can imagine that that probably didn't go over too well with some people. I was working in the mission office when the article came out, and every new crop of missionaries would say, do you know this other Peterson? Well, he must be a terrible missionary. And I said, no, he's really a good missionary. He's just really honest. And then when I came home, I ended up working in the BYU writing lab with the guy they had interviewed in South Africa. And I said, you know, the things that you said could have been written by, you know, the church's PR department. I said, well, why did you do that? And I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly the words. But he said, it's kind of hard to give an honest account when you have an apostle sitting next to you the whole time. And I thought, yeah. Whereas the guy in our mission, they just sent this mission, the reporter out there, said goodbye. And so he told him what he thought. I didn't have an apostle sitting with me. But I kind of spun things too. I didn't tell my family or my friends that the truth about what was going on. I spun my mission into the things that you would expect. Hard living conditions turned into adversity that I overcame, and I just didn't talk about a lot of stuff. And I would lie in my letters home. I told my parents everything was just going great. I was fine, loved the place, loved the people, everything was wonderful. And then this guy went home, this elder, who had worked in the next area over, and he lived in the state next to mine in California. So he volunteered to take some stuff home for me. So my dad asked him, well, how's John doing down there? And he said, oh, well, last time I saw him, he was really sick. He said that they don't have running water where they live, and it's really bad. And when I weighed like 114 pounds at the time. And so I lied. I didn't tell my parents any of that. So when my dad found out what was really going on, he was really angry with me. And he wrote to me, made me promise that I wouldn't lie to him again, but I still did. And so I wanted to talk about why this happens. Why do we why do we only, you know, mission experience, imagine it's this much, you know, from good to bad, and we only talk about this much over here. Now, how many in here serve missions? Okay, now, keep your hands up. How many of you that serve missions have told people it was just a wonderful, great experience to do it in the event? Okay, now, of those of you who did that, how many of them have you ever had a dream where you're back in your mission? Now, keep your hands up. Now, how many of you have had, when you wake up, say, oh, I wish I was back? Really?
Not lately.
Okay.
I did for a while.
Yeah, I remember I had the opposite dream when I was in Bolivia. I dreamed I was at home at the beach with some of the elders from my zone. And we were having a great time, and I said, wouldn't it be awful if this was just a dream and I woke up and we were back in Bolivia? And then I woke up and I saw the pink cracking plaster on the ceiling, and I thought, oh, crap, I am still in Bolivia. But there are two reasons we do this. One is that we're told to. We're told to be positive and to spin things. But the more important thing to me is that we sort of do it to ourselves for certain cultural reasons. So between November and April, I talked to about 30 people who'd been on missions and asked them specifically about how they had treated their mission stories, what they had told people. And so I'm going to use their quotes to illustrate what I'm doing. So first of all, people are directly told to spin things. Here's one missionary says, this was the rule of my mission. Should you write home about any negative experience and have a family member call the office to check up on you, you would find yourself in the mission president's office really fast. Every letter home was to be a faith-promoting letter. The reasoning was that your family wouldn't worry about you and flood the office with phone calls about your well-being, wasting the president's valuable time. Another missionary, reports, the MTC president and his spouse told us during the orientation meeting that we should never write home about negative aspects of our mission. We should always keep it positive. I still remember her saying the bad experiences will outnumber the good, but the good will outweigh the bad. So you get told that, and in my mission, a couple of people I know said that our mission president told them in their exit interview, never ever say anything negative about the mission or about Bolivia. I didn't get that because he was running late and he just said, I'm sorry, we need to get you on the plane. Is everything okay? And I said, yeah. But one of my missionary friends, he was my zone leader down there, he said that the mission president had told them that. Don't say anything negative. And so when he got home, his bishop asked him to give a presentation to the Aaronic priesthood about his mission. So he showed slides and little souvenirs, and he gave faith-promoting stories. But then he told them that they needed to be prepared for things they might not be expecting. They might get sent to a place where the living conditions are bad, or where people don't like Mormons or don't like Americans. They needed to be prepared for those things. And afterwards, the bishop came up to him and said, would you come into my office, please? And he said, just yelled at him and said, we're trying to encourage these boys. Don't ever do that again. And he said it was kind of shocking. So he learned that if you were candid, you might get some hostility. So that's one reason we do it, is the fear of a bad reaction. Another missionary says, I learned quickly that being candid about my mission only got me scorned. I think that's true. I mean, when I published my book, I had some people say, it's so negative, And I was at dinner with my sister and her in-laws, and her father-in-law was a mission president. And so she got talking about my book and how negative it was. And he said, well, what was so negative? So she went through the things, and he and his wife just said, yeah, well, that happens all the time. How's that negative? So, but as again, people expect that you're going to give them a template, the standard story, and they might have respond badly. Another one is that they want to meet their the expectations of family and church. Everybody sort of, I've heard this so many times, parents saying, if I could just get my kid on a mission, then he'll grow up and he'll become a man and I won't have to worry about it anymore. And when missionaries do come home, everybody says, wow, they've changed so much, they've grown up so much. And I remember I was the travel secretary on a mission. I was standing in the airport watching a group of about, I think it was 18 missionaries going home. Most of them were really great missionaries, great people, but there are a few of them that were not only not good missionaries, but weren't really good Mormons either. And I remember thinking to myself, they're going to go home, they'll all give their homecoming talk, and nobody's going to know what kind of missionary any of them are. There'll be no distinction between the guy whose father died in the MPC. It was a legend in our mission for persevering. And that other guy who, drunk a lot, nobody's going to know. And another person said here, missionaries are a significant part of the problem and are unaware that they are doing the whitewashing. So I think a good share of this is subconscious, since it's supposed to be the best 2 years of your life. Then that's the way you play. Another thing is that you just don't want to disappoint your family. You don't want to be the guy who comes home and says, oh yeah, it was awful. Yeah, no one else says that, so you don't want to be that guy. This one guy said that he even censored his journal. I didn't. Most of my journal entries started today, so. I'm not kidding them. But this kid said, I took the journal on my mission, and even though I was miserable most of the time, I still only wrote positive experiences in it. I was afraid someone else would read it and be disappointed. Another one said, I remember being told to put only positive things in our journals because one day our progeny would read them. I actually tore pages out of my journal because although they were truths, they weren't faithful. That, I think, is pretty sad. Another one is that people feel they need to set an example. And I think we all were, when I was a kid, I remember seeing the missionaries in our ward and thinking, wow, these are the epitome of spiritual giants. And you want to come home from your mission being that example. You want to help the other kids, encourage them to go on missions. And so one guy wrote, when I got home, if I couldn't think of something faith-promoting or at least harmlessly funny to say about my mission, I was quiet on the subject. I don't think anyone actually told me to do that. I just felt like I needed to be an example. And this one, I think, is kind of sad. Guy writes, my wife was talking the other day about what she might have done to help our kids keep their testimonies. She wondered if maybe she should have talked more about her mission. I had to remind her that the reason she never tells them anything about her mission is because it was a horrible experience. She agreed. Now, again, it's not that missions are horrible, and that's not my point. But we have this broad set of experiences that we ignore most of them, and it's kind of a shame. Another is that you sort of feel like everybody else is doing this. Everybody else is having a great experience. Why am I not? So you kind of say, yeah, I am too. This one set guy says if there, he felt like if there was something wrong with his mission experience, the problem was with him, not with the church or anything else. Another guy said, I saw that others who returned home from the missions had amazing experiences. So I kept wondering when I was going to have these experiences. I think I kept trying to transform my explanations of the experiences I did have into something more amazing than they really were. I was trying to transfigure simple stories into mythic stories. Another guy said that he felt the need to spin the mission in a positive light. Maybe part of it was subconscious because I wanted to validate the experience in my own eyes. I think that's perceptive. Another sister missionary talked about how she worked as hard as she could, and she told everybody at home, I felt pressure as a sister missionary to stay positive and show that I could be just as good a missionary as the boys were. I heard so many negative stories about sister missionaries, how they never got along with each other, how they were only there because no one would marry them. She says, only a Mormon is a girl and old maid. So I never ever wrote home about any of my companions' craziness, and I really talked up the ones I actually felt close to. I didn't tell my parents about some serious health problems I was having because I didn't want to seem weak. I constantly talked about how much I loved the work and the amazing experiences I was having, even though a lot of time I was questioning the tactics and feeling discouraged about the lack of success. When I got home, I perfected the art of creating inspiring stories and object lessons out of rather mundane experiences. And I think we all did that, or at least a lot of us did. I did. And what happens, now I said, for me, I'd shoved so much down inside that I couldn't, I forgot a lot of stuff. And a lot of people have said the same thing, that their mission has almost become this fiction that they tell themselves and tell others, and they don't even remember the things that actually did happen. This guy said that he twisted his mission, his journal, he twisted it so positively that he felt his journal had crossed into fiction. So if people were to read my journal, they would have a clue about how tough it really was. Basically, my story, as recorded in my journals, is completely biased. I should probably go out and destroy them for this very reason. That's kind of sad. And I found when I was writing my book that things that really affected me at the time, when I went through my journal, I barely mentioned it. For example, the only general authority we saw in 2 years came and yelled at us for an hour. And my companion and I were both very sick. We got out of bed to go see this guy, because only general authority we'd seen in about a year and a half. And he yelled at us, and we went home. And I remember sitting there, and he had basically said we weren't working hard enough, we weren't committed enough, we didn't fix the movie. We came home, and we thought, he couldn't have been talking to us, but he had said, some of you are probably thinking, I'm not talking about you. He said, but I am. And so we went home, and we were literally in tears. And we talked for about an hour, and by the end of the hour, we agreed with him. Yeah, he was right. I wrote in my journal, went to the Zone conference, and heard an awesome talk from that's how it works. So when people come home, they are so used to suppressing things like that that they can't talk about it anymore. I worked with a guy who's active in church and teaches gospel doctrine, but he served his mission 25 years ago, and he said to me that he's never spoken to anyone about his mission. Never. he refused to give a homecoming talk. He said he hasn't even been able to talk about it with his therapist. And so, of course, I said, well, what could possibly have been so bad in Dallas that you can't talk about it? And he looked at me and he said, no, you don't understand. I don't want to talk about it. I have no idea what happened to him. Another missionary talks about how when you're in the same place, you know, you can't talk about it. But I don't want to rehash the bad experiences, but I told a friend of mine about a less than inspiring incident at my mission. He nearly started to cry because he'd been home over a year and then had been holding in all the negative feelings he had. The trauma of the mission had been compounded by the compulsion to keep silent and pretend that not only did it not happen, but that it was an unmitigated positive experience. He says that the inability of some RMs to work through the crap they put up with makes the mission an even more damaging experience for them. Obviously, he's not saying missions, but I think that's what happens. We get to the point where we erase part of our past. And so, what can we do to help with this? One thing that I don't expect that the church is ever going to change anything, and I certainly am not going to tell the church what to do. But there are things that I think parents and families can do. One thing is that before your kids go on a mission, talk to them about what it really is like. These days, most kids that go on a mission, their parents, at least one of them went on a mission. My wife and I both do. And we know what it's like. And speaking frankly to them might help them cope a little bit. So when I was in the MGC, we were told that Bolivia was a wonderful place where people would walk up to you on the street and beg to be baptized. I kind of literally told us that. And it didn't happen, obviously. another thing is to tell them to be honest in their letters home. And so I'm thinking that if we ask specific questions in our letters to them, that we're encouraging them to be honest in return. Because I feel like I didn't really share my mission with my parents and my family, because the letters I wrote home were not really my mission. And so I think if you know what to ask, then you might get some honest answers. My son's friend came home from his mission about a year and a half ago, and he was over helping us move one day. And I was talking to him about his mission in Paraguay, which is right next to Bolivia. And then I asked him some specific questions about living conditions, and I don't remember what. And I could see he just completely relaxed, and then he started talking about what it was actually like. And after that conversation, he said, it feels really good to talk about this, he said, because I can't talk to my dad about this. He has no idea what it was like. And then the last thing I think we can do, and we all went through a physical when we got home. I go to the doctor, fill out a form, I made sure we didn't have tuberculosis, whatever. But nobody thinks to see how these missionaries are doing emotionally or mentally. It wouldn't be a bad idea to just have them sit down with a therapist for an hour and say, and have them talk. Let them know there's a safe place to talk. And it seems to me that most missionaries, that would be it, that 1 hour. But some might, a therapist might see there's some problems. And if they don't do that, then that kid comes home, has no one to talk to, and there's something festering there. Anyways, I love my mission. I loved it and I hated it in some ways, but people ask me, do you regret going on the mission? And absolutely not. I learned about who I am. I learned I'm a lot tougher than I thought I was. And of course, I met my wife, so that was the best part of it. But I wish that it took me over 20 years to really get any of this out of my system. And I sat down and started writing, and I wrote every night for about 6 weeks. It was just like this big catharsis of emptying my soul of all this stuff I put away. And I hope that in the future that we have better means of making sure that that stuff doesn't get put away, but that people can talk freely about it and deal with what happened and heal from whatever they've been through. And I think we owe that to our kids, to the whole mission.
I think John has provided a very valuable piece here about the missionary experience and how we relate to them. And some advice about how we have to take those experiences and helping those that we influence now, our children, our grandchildren, about mission. I've had two mission experiences. One was when I was a young missionary in Guatemala.
Speak up.
Okay. I've had two mission experiences. One when I was a young missionary in Guatemala, which was very similar to what's in Bolivia. And then second, I was mission president in Ecuador, which is also another largely Indian countries. Poor, humble people. They were very peace-loving people at that time. Guatemala is not a peace-loving country now. It's full of guns and they shoot each other. My first mission was, I got to Central America, which was, the mission included everything from Mexico to Peru, basically. We had 100 missionaries and 500 members of the church in that whole group, most of them in Guatemala alone. I sensed, as I related to my missionary companions from that time, we had this feeling of being a band of brothers, basically together there, and we talk about those experiences as almost reverential. We didn't have the church did not have formalized mission programs at that time to how you live and how you preach the gospel and things like that. It was just sort of like you went out there and you started to find people and teach them. And we saw the mission president every 3 months. Most, if you're down in Costa Rica, he was in Guatemala, so I met that one. So you're on your own, and basically I think the trust that he left with the missionaries was very much of an enhancing experience for them to define their own experience. I think as a mission president, I didn't see that. They were looking to me to tell them what to do, the rules were there. They had that little white handbook, little white Bible that was dealt with. And that was the code of conduct, they had all come from the MTC where they had some very specific ideas about how to preach and how to teach and how to live and how to feel. I think the experiences of not meeting those expectations was a lot greater than the missionaries I was where I was president 25 years ago than I was one of the missionaries 50 years ago. I mean, that's a difference. I think John's paper here is very helpful to I wish I had read that paper before my missionaries went out and before my grandsons went out. I think there's things I would have said more to them. But it didn't happen. But, I mean, there's one part of the mission experience that missionaries have that John didn't touch on, or did it on tangentially talked about. Now, the relationship with the mission president and the mission president's wife. And I think that that, as I've talked to my sons, and I've been reading my own, that has a tremendous experience and influence on what kind of mission one has. I'm going to cite a great example. When I went out in 1953, they sent us to the MTC, and it was an MTC. It was 10 days, and that was it. No language training at all. We didn't have a mission teaching assignment in Spanish. It was just English. We went there, and two of us went to Guatemala. I was presiding over that group of missionaries. And he knew less Spanish. I knew a little bit of Spanish at all. And we got through the airport, got our bags out, and we were sitting on the curb, expected to see someone come and pick us up. Mission president was supposed to be there. Nobody was there. And so I felt it was my responsibility to get us somewhere, to get to the mission home. And so I went over and started trying to talk to the taxi driver. And I told him that we were needed to get off by Travel 587 in the Infoso Quinta Siete, which is a post office. I didn't know that. I thought this was a street address. And sure, he knew where to take us. He didn't speak any much more English than I did Spanish. He wanted to get us in his cab and off we go. So we get in the cab and go down the street. We're about two blocks down the street, and we see behind us coming up a green, sort of a faded green Chevrolet, and with a man with white hair driving up behind us, honking his horn, shaking his fist. I had grown up here in Salt Lake, and I knew a lot of the family members. He was from El Paso, but knew a lot of the family members of that tribe, and he looked a lot like him. So when he honks at his wife, I don't know how I communicated with him, he stopped the cab. And I went out, and he got out of his car, and I got out of mine, and I extended my hand to him, and I told him, "President, I'm Elder Pinckney. I'm glad to be here." And his response, I expected a soft, loving response, and welcome to Guatemala. The happy, lovely. His response was, "Damn fools, why didn't you wait for me?" And I grew to love him, and I still admire him, but it was short. That was not the mission president I expected, and not the experience with him. And there are many instances. This morning I walked around the hills up in Salt Lake with one of my sons, who is a lapsed Mormon right now, and has thought a lot about his mission. And he actually went to Guatemala 25 years after I did. We talked about his experience and what a terrible experience it was for him. His first mission president, who never talked to the missionaries, blamed them for the things that happened, put him in a place where he came in and was set up with a hinterland of the mission where all the missionaries that were going home ended up, because once they'd been in the office, they were supposed to spend the last part of their mission someplace, and they could pick where they went. And they all picked northern Guatemala, where the ruins were, where nobody came. And there they sort of detoxed and talking about the experiences they had in the office under his mission plan. Here he was a young new missionary, idealistic, out of the MTC, and he had to live with those experiences, listening to them. And it about destroyed him, and I think was the part of his ending up going. That was a bad experience for him. The mission president accused him of not being loyal because he wouldn't rat on the stories these guys were telling him because he never talked to them. Later, had a Latin mission president who turned it around, and it was the most marvelous experience of his life, basically. And that's normally the other way around. Mission presidents from foreign countries don't do too well with North Americans, but for him it was the tonic that worked. But I think that mission president, and then the wife of the mission president, too, can have all kinds of influence on missionaries, and lady missionaries, too. I would advise, certainly, as I told this first son of mine when he got on the airplane, somehow I had an epiphany before I went to Los Angeles to see him off on the plane, and the last thing, just before he went on the plane, I said to him, and I don't know why I said it to him, remember, support your mission president, even if he's a turkey. Exact words. Which he fed back to me a year later. He said, I've tried that. He is a turkey. I'm having a hard time. I think we need to prepare missionaries to go out with her. The world is not idealistic. Those that it relates to will be human, it's going to be a challenge for him to how to accommodate that and make this experience a good one. I don't think everybody ought to go on a mission. Even though I went on one, my sons have gone on a mission, but I love it. I think that if somebody doesn't want to go on a mission, he shouldn't go. It's that simple. I said that in the missionary fireside over in Denver where my son was in the bishopric. And I said that, and after the bishopric, he came up to me and said, you know, I've never thought of that. He said, you're right. He said, they shouldn't be. He said, we spend all our time here encouraging, pushing, and things like that, and not helping and think about, too sure I'd be out there, I'd be having this experience. Anyway, made my comment.
I'll just say it. I loved my mission president and his wife. They're wonderful people. I guess we have 15 minutes for any questions. Yes.
Going through the presentation, one comment and then a couple of questions. I had the same experience you did about basically writing positive things in my journal. And as I look back on it, I think part of what was going on with me is that I had psyched myself up so much to get on a mission. Like, you know, going into a basketball game or a football game where, you know, my typical self would not go bang the boards and get the rebounds, but you keep yourself so psyched up that I'm going to do something that I don't really want to do. And you don't let negative thoughts come in. You don't let the negative thoughts like, oh, this team's better than we are. He's bigger than I am. I'm just going to focus on the positive. And it usually works out pretty well for some people. And for me, I think it did. I made it all the way through the mission. I didn't have any mental breakdowns, and most of the people that went out with me did. And my experience is kind of like yours. I look back on it, and I would never want to go back. But on the other hand, I'm very glad that I went. I don't know. I think you sort of expressed the same thoughts. My questions are this. Regarding your book, did you publish it yourself, or did you get a publisher, and how... How's the sales been
working
together?
Well, I shopped it around to a bunch of publishers, and the one publisher that said, yeah, we're interested, but they said they wanted it to be either pro-church or anti-church. And I said, I don't want to do that. And I wanted to write, this is the experience I had as a 19, 20-year-old kid, and I don't want it to have an agenda. And so I ended up just publishing it myself, and it's on Amazon, and there's a few copies out. There's a table out in the hallway over here, so I think there's a few copies left. But you can get it online on Amazon through Kindle. You reminded me of when I got out there. I was so excited, and then I got put with this guy who it was his last month. Everybody knew he had a girlfriend in every town, and I was sick. Really, really sick. So he said, well, we're not going to go out and do missionary work. The members know that if they want us to teach anybody, they can come on Thursdays at 4 o'clock. The rest of the week he made donuts and sold them. Anyway. He said, well, we have to have money to bribe the fire department to fill the baptismal pond. That was about the low point of my mission, and that's when my new mission president came. We had an interview with him, and I was out in the hallway of the hotel waiting to go in, and I had psyched myself up to just be as positive as I possibly could. And then one of the APs said, he wants you to tell him what's really going on and just be as honest as you can. And I walked in there, shook his hand, sat down, and burst into tears. So I completely relate to that. Yeah, and the book's out there. It's called Heaven Up Here. Does that answer the question?
You know, I was thinking, obviously, I am the delusional one who came home and had dreams that I liked about going back into the mission field. And I've thought about that. I had a very good friend in the MTC who remained my friend throughout. And he and I had very different experiences in that in the MTC, even he was homesick. He was really sad about being there. We would stay up all night, and we kind of became friends in spite of ourselves, talking about this stuff. And he won't really talk. And even coming home, he won't really talk about his mission experiences. I am now the lapsed Mormon, and he's still faithful. And I,
we're in the same ward.
Yeah, we're in the same ward now. And I'm dangerous because all these things, even now in his adult life, that he can't talk about, he definitely can't talk about with me now because I'm Satan. So, but I was thinking, you know, there are a number of different factors that some people sort of hit the magic combination, have a disposition for sort of that black and white thinking that makes for enthusiastic missionaries. I went to a great mission. I had, for the most part, you know, pretty good mission presence and good experiences with people, and just, you know, the difference between going to, say, Italy and going to Dallas or going to Bolivia is, I think, makes for a lot of that, you know, or to what degree people are pro-American, pro-North American or not. But I think a lot of it in my mind is that personal disposition. What kind of personality are you? And should you, like Toby said, should you be out there and come back and have to sort of suppress all of this? And did you talk with very many people about where they really said, no, honestly, I had sort of the prototypically good mission. It wasn't all fairy tales, but it was fun.
My wife is that. You know, like I said, we were in exactly the same place, same time. And in fact, the way I met my wife is that we didn't have running water, so we used to go over to her house on Tuesdays to have our weekly shower. But yeah, she had rocks thrown at her. She had a lot of pretty crummy things happen. But when I talk to her, she doesn't relate to what I'm talking about, because for her, it was a wonderful growing experience that she, you know, is sacred to her. And so it does have a lot to do with perspective and attitude. And maybe mine is bad, but I think, like I said, enough people out there have said that to me, that they felt the same way I did, that they suppressed a lot, that it isn't just a few people, it's a lot.
Oh, and I think that, absolutely.
But yeah, I do know people that, well, I had a guy in my mission that he posted on my Facebook this nasty comment about how rotten my book was, and I said, did you read it? And he said, no. But he just assumed.
This is a question for the audience. So I have had, Greg mentioned dreams. I have had a recurring nightmare that I understand combat veterans have as well, of being recalled to service. I find somehow that I'm sent to my people. I'm like, I have a mortgage, I have a job, I don't have a temple recommend, I have a coffee habit. That's okay, you'll be fine. And I am curious about how many other people have this.
Yeah, we talked about this at the beginning.
Can I comment on that? In my family, I come from a family of five kids, and we all have this mission. this nightmare, and we even talked about even my dad went long time ago has this nightmare. But the other part of the nightmare for us is that we go and explain, like I have children, like my sister's like, I'm nursing a baby, I can't be a missionary, no, it's fine. And but never does it occur to us that we shouldn't ask.
Right.
We always go and ask, and we have this thing like, how did it, you know, we talk about this, like, we think that if we could ever have the nightmare and we go home, we just say, forget this, we're going home, and I don't care what the mission president said, I don't care what anybody says, I'm going home, then we make sure. And we're never cured. Like, you know, every time we get together, there's all these rehashes of saying where I went, I explained, I can't beat a missionary, no, you'll be fine, and you're stuck. And you never in the dream, it never occurs to you to just leave. Because that's part of the mission. You can't just leave.
Yeah.
You get stuck.
How many people do leave? The numbers? Or how many missionaries leave? And then, second, the pressure on missionaries to stay, say, if they express the difficulty of living with your presence. You're obviously encouraged to stick it out. Do you have experience with other people who want to go and somebody to stay with?
My experience of mission trips was there were a number of missionaries who left the mission trip.
And that probably
involved there were maybe 10% to 15% of missionaries left the mission trip, but about half of those were because of illness. But those who walked out said they don't want to do this, and I never could see any reason why they felt that way, but they did. That was maybe 1 or 2% was all. We walked out voluntarily without a reason. Others, a few were sent home for problems.
Don't they take passports from missionaries?
What's that?
Don't they take passports away from missionaries?
Oh yeah, we have them all. Yeah.
Right. See you quickly.
I knew within 10 minutes of saying goodbye to my parents at the MTC that I had made the biggest mistake of my life. Never once occurred to me to go home. I was going to endure to the end, and it was the single worst experience in my entire life.
First of all, thank you, John and Toby. I've got a lot of thoughts here. I'll condense it down to one. I'm thinking about the success that missionaries in the 19th century had, you know, without personal script, they're out on their own. And at times I reflect upon why were they so successful? Was it a product of their times? Or, and here's my theory, it was a product of perhaps they did not have to account to district, zone, and mission presidents. They were just out there to follow their own conscience and to not necessarily always be a tag team with their companion. I'll leave with this thought. After my mission, I went backpacking through Europe for 8 days. Just meeting people. Everything was on my back. I was alone. And at times I wonder if that 8 days was more productive. What I'm saying is I talked about everything that was me. I talked about my country, my city, my college experience, and my church when that came up. And in total, it was a wonderful 8 days. And so I'm wondering, Toby, maybe you can be a catalyst for this. I like to propose that we invent freelance missions. We're 19 and 21-year-olds... They can use a dartboard if they want and throw up the map. They can choose the destination that they wish to go to. They still have the send-off at the sacrament meeting if they wish. And they simply go there. Hiking boots, skis, rock climbing equipment, whatever fits their personality. And they go and they matriculate into that area. And sure, they have a missionary-mindedness to their attitude, but it's also preaching about everything that's good and right about humanity.
You shouldn't go and preach, you should go and learn. You should take that 8 days and go and learn the culture there instead of trying to tell them about where you live.
So any comments on my thoughts?
Right after World War II, my S. Dilworth Young was mission president in New England. And Truman Manson was a missionary there. Armin Moss was. Some others with luminary names. And they at times said in the summertime, go. Just go out, not purse or strip, go where the Spirit tells you to go. And they probably told them what roads to go on. But they went out, and they talk about it as being a sort of a purging experience, a great experience they had. I don't think they got any missionary work done. They just didn't take taken in. They spent a lot of nights in barns sleeping in them. But they talk about that experience as being a wonderful thing where they sort of found themselves. Pass that along. I never tried that.
I think I'm hearing you say that the freelance mission would not be productive if baptisms is the way you measure productivity.
And I think, you know, doing that in New England is not the only place where it might be tried. There are a lot of places in different New England. That's the only one I know where it's been tried, basically, in this modern time.
I had a sort of similar experience towards the end of my mission. We were asked, my companion and I were sent out to three towns out in the middle of the jungle. And we were probably 500 miles from any other missionaries. And there were no phones, and we didn't know what the branches, if they were even functioning out there. The mission president just said, go out there, find out what's going on, if they're holding meetings, get some people to teach, and if everything's okay, move on to the next one. And it was great, because at the last month of my mission, the mission president set a goal to have 1,000 baptisms. And I remember thinking, well, he asked us to do a specific thing, and I'm not going to worry about 1,000 baptisms. I'm just going to do what he asked us to do. Yes, sir?
When I had been out about a month, I went to Germany, and I think maybe one of the differences between your mission and mine is I was in a country where health issues were not major. If I had been sick, down to 114 pounds and had a fever, I think that would probably make anyone depressed and for a poor experience. But the health in our mission was fairly good. We didn't have to worry about that. The other thing is the mission president. I had two mission presidents, and Toby mentioned this, and you did, others have too. The first one was kind of a used car salesman type. And he was a jerk. And he was also really lazy. And I always thought, if he really believes what he's talking about, why isn't he out baptizing his neighbors? And it seemed like mission presidents sit in these fancy homes, drive the Mercedes-Benz in Germany and so on. And it's do as we say, not as we do. Anyway, I've been out for maybe a month or so. And 1 week, there were no baptisms. And so in the weekly newsletter that came out, there was a little place in the front of it where they usually listed the baptisms. That was the main leading article. And it was empty. And there was and then down below, there was an asterisk. And this space is left empty. And there's a quote that took the place of the baptisms. For behold, there are many with whom I am not well pleased, for they are afraid to open their mouths. And I had been working like a dog ever since I got out there. And that just hit me wrong. And I wrote my weekly letter to the mission president, just telling him that that was terribly inappropriate, and calling him some names, making some little quotes, and didn't hear anything about it until the next conference where the missionaries got together. We had our interviews, and he took out that letter. Brother Bowen, let me read this to you. You're Brother Bowen in Germany, not Elder, thankfully. He read the whole thing to me. He must have taken a psychology class or something. But towards the end, he said, would you like your parents to read this? And now I would have said, you bet. But then I said, no. However, he never did that. Let's pull that trick again.
In the school district's authority,
he's dead now. he's dead and gone to hell.
I loved my mission president. I worked in the office for 6 months. I watched how he operated. He did it the way I thought it should be done. But yeah, we had a newsletter that came out every month, and all the baptisms were listed, and there was a big one. At the top was a box with the top baptizing companionship. It's called the Rocky Box. I don't know why who came up with that. But then you flip the thing over, and there's the zero page. Nobody wanted to be on the zero page, so it was kind of a numbers thing. Well, it looks like we're out of time, so thank you, and